I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 18th of March. Diane Ravitch is in Milwaukee today to speak at a community rally for public schools. It's taking place at MATC, and it's 2 days before the state budget hearing in Milwaukee, the Joint Finance Committee hearing on Governor Walker's proposed pre-K through 12 education cuts of $127 million, and also the expansion of voucher and privately run charter schools. This is tonight at 6 o'clock at Cooley Auditorium on State Street in Milwaukee, and public hearings are going to be held in many places in the state during this week. The first will be the one at MATC. It's not a public hearing, it's more a rally. There's a public hearing at Brilliant High School in Calumet County, a hearing on March 22nd at Vernal College in Milwaukee, March 23rd at UW-Barron County in Rice Lake, March 26th at Reedsburg High School. The Brilliant, Alverno, and UW-Barron County hearings beginning at 10 o'clock in the morning and are scheduled to end at 5 o'clock, and the Reedsburg hearing is scheduled from 9:30 in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Diane Ravitch has been on our show several times before. I'll give her bio. We're just trying to track her down right now, so let me talk for a little while until we reach her. These figures were cited in yesterday's Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You may have seen this, a front page story. Schools scramble to absorb aid cuts. Milwaukee Public Schools facing a loss of at least $12 million next year. Wauwatosa Schools, $900,000. Waukesha Schools, $2 million in lost aid. Menominee Falls, $600,000. Districts are facing a $150 per pupil aid payment that Wisconsin school districts received over the past 2 years, that will no longer be the case. And there have been many districts all over the state that have sent letters to the Joint Finance Committee asking for restoration of funding. Those of you in the education field in the state of Wisconsin can fill in details on all of this, certainly. And we'll be welcoming phone calls, and we hope to reach Diane Ravitch momentarily. Let me give you her bio so we can put her right on the air when we find her. She is a research professor of education at New York University and a historian of education. She has an interesting background. She was Assistant Secretary of Education and Counselor to the Secretary of Education, Lamar Alexander, in the administration of President George H.W. Bush from 97 to 2004, a member of the National Assessment Governing Board, which oversaw the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the federal testing program. She was appointed by the Clinton administration Secretary of Education Richard Riley in 1997, reappointed in 2001. She's the author of many books, including most recently The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education. And she has come out as an extremely vocal opponent of voucher schools and privately run charter schools, and a vocal opponent of excessive testing in our country's schools. We're going to be welcoming your phone calls during the course of this hour, and here is our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we have already received some messages on this issue and where we would like to receive some more messages on this issue, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that is at K Dunn Show. So we'll be looking at the future of public education in the state of Wisconsin, the first hour of our program today. Hour number two, we have an interesting guest. She's a colonel, and she's become a very outspoken critic of U.S. involvement in Iraq. Colonel Ann Wright will be joining us hour number two of our program, and she'll have a lot to say about all kinds of issues. So that's what's on tap. And Diane Ravitch is with us. Diane Ravitch, thank you very much for being with us. Oh, she's on a different line. My fault. Hi, Diane. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you back. Let's just look at a philosophy here. It is hard for some to understand, particularly people in public education or who went through really good public schools in Wisconsin and in other states, why there would be a movement to put a lot of funding into voucher schools and into private charter schools when we don't really know what's going to happen with those schools. Why take the risk?
Well, we do know a lot about both the vouchers and the charters. Milwaukee has had vouchers for 25 years. It's had charters for 25 years, and they do not outperform public schools. They usually underperform them. The public schools are actually better than vouchers or charters, and yet Governor Walker wants to expand both of these underperforming sectors.
Why?
Well, I assume it's because he just believes it's a matter of ideology in the free market, and he wants people to be consumers and go shopping and pick the school of their choice, even if it's not a very good school.
And is this a move that really is gaining traction in many states in the country, Diane?
Well, it is. I mean, what's really bizarre is that for many years, the American public strongly believed that no public money should go to religious schooling, and they weren't against religious schooling. It was just, if you want religious schooling, that's fine. Pay for it yourself. And over the past several years, we've seen more and more states adopting vouchers, and it has not been overturned. It started in Milwaukee in 1990, and the state court here said it was okay, and then it spread to Cleveland. And a lot of this was promoted by right-wing money like the Bradley Foundation in Wisconsin, and they led the court fight, and eventually the Supreme Court said, well, it's the parents' choice. So now you have states like Indiana and other states, Louisiana, a number of other states have also adopted vouchers. They don't call them vouchers, though. They always have a euphemism. They call them opportunity scholarships. And even the District of Columbia has a voucher program. But, you know, all of these programs that have been evaluated, and in particular Milwaukee, Cleveland, and D.C., have found that the voucher students don't do any better in the voucher schools, and they often do much worse.
I outlined at the top of the show the amount of money that various school districts are going to be facing next year. MPS, $12 million loss. Wauwatosa, $900,000. Waukesha, $2 million in lost aid. Some of these are heavily Republican areas. Menominee Falls, and the list goes on through other districts throughout the state. I would imagine that many of those districts, and I know they've written letters to the Joint Finance Committee, are pretty upset about this. I'm wondering what the ramifications will be in the classroom.
Well, it's clearly going to mean larger classes. It probably will mean cutbacks in things like the arts. That's where people usually go for the arts first, which is weird because that's the thing that kids really enjoy a lot. But they're going to have to obviously be deep cutbacks, not just in K-12, but also at the university level. I think the University of Wisconsin is going to be devastated by the proposal of about $300 million cut. What's bizarre is that not just in Wisconsin, but in other states, Republican governors are going right for education funding. In the state of Arizona, the governor's proposed to eliminate community colleges. So you have to wonder, do they not believe that education is important? I mean, I've wondered about the legislators, for example, in Wisconsin. I would think that most of them went to public schools. Why are they so eager to defund public schools and take the public money and give it to private entrepreneurs? Now that we know the track record is very clear, public schools have a function in a democratic society, and they actually outperform charters and vouchers. Why are they doing this? It just doesn't make any sense, except as a matter of ideology that's impervious to evidence.
It's interesting, and I'm wondering if it is completely a partisan issue, because much has been made of the difference between Wisconsin and the state of Minnesota, where they have increased the amount of money for education, public schools, by a huge amount this coming year, increased universal access for preschool, and increased opportunities for people to go to college. It's really quite a dramatic difference.
Well, it's certainly true that there's a partisan difference in terms of support for higher education. Where there's unfortunately not a partisan difference is charter schools, because the Obama administration has been very supportive of charter schools. The Clinton administration was very supportive of charter schools. And a lot of the tax breaks were initiated during the Clinton administration to spur the development of more charters. But what's changed dramatically over the past say, 15 years is that there are now so many for-profit entrepreneurs entering into the charter sector, and they continue to take over and to really, there are more of them now than there were of the mom-and-pop charters, which fall by the wayside as the charter chains spread. But most of the states that have charters, and almost every state now does, they don't really have any accountability for charters. And it's because whether it's Indiana or Michigan or Wisconsin, the people running these states get big campaign contributions from the charter founders, charter leaders, and then the accountability is just unimportant.
Did it start with the purest of motives, Diane? I know in Milwaukee there was concern about students going to, low-income students going to mostly MPS schools, mm-hmm. and some people, many in the minority community, believing that their education wasn't as top-notch as those who were in schools where they paid more money per student, and so the whole choice movement started. Was the charter movement started in order to give people access to something that would raise test scores, that it would allow those students to lessen the achievement gap?
Sure. Well, the charter movement started with the best of motives, and the idea was that, and we hear this still today, allowing families to choose would enable them to escape from failing schools, or that they are trapped in failing schools, and so if they could choose to go someplace else, they'd choose a better school. But we now know that that actually didn't happen. And that the movers behind the charter movement are the people who put the big money in, whether it was the Walton Foundation, which is responsible for a very large percentage of charters in this country. The Walton Foundation is the Walmart family, and they have they're all billionaires, and they've put a lot of money into charters because, first of all, they don't like unions, and secondly, they don't like public education. They like everything to be private and entrepreneurial. So it's been a false promise to minority families, because if you look at the outcomes of all of the choice that Milwaukee has, and Milwaukee has more choices than any other place in the country, it has a thriving charter sector, a thriving voucher sector, and a struggling public sector. The public sector actually has higher test scores. There's not been any evaluation that's shown that kids get an advantage by going voucher or charter. And when you look at the national performance of Milwaukee compared to other cities, the federal testing program has included Milwaukee since 2009. Minority students in Milwaukee are performing on the same level as minority students in the Deep South, where the performance is absolutely rock bottom. So it's been a broken promise to minority families. They have not gotten a better education. They've had lots of choices, and those choices include schools that are very bad schools, where people don't know that. And so they sign up hoping that they're making a good choice, and they're making a bad choice. And the city of Milwaukee would have been much better off had all that money been combined to make the public schools much better, to have reduced class sizes, early childhood programs, and better arts programs, and all the things that make for good schools. Instead, you know, there are now three competitive sectors, all of which are performing very poorly.
What was it that made you change your mind, Diane, about everything?
Well, I was very active in two very important conservative think tanks, and I was a believer that choice and competition would lead to improvement, and particularly to expanding opportunity to, especially to black and Hispanic families. And over time, we, within these think tanks, were talking about the fact that it wasn't happening. And so there was a lot of conversation. Was it the demand side? Was it the supply side? What was going wrong? And we knew internally that these solutions weren't solving anything. They were failing. And I reached a point where it just struck me very forcefully that none of these solutions made any sense, and they were not working, and that I had to go with the evidence. And the evidence was that public education is very important, and everything I know and have known over many years supports the idea that if you look at, let's say, the international picture, and you say, what are the 10 top performing nations doing? They don't have vouchers and they don't have charters. And yet this country seems to be intent on breaking up its public education system and doing something that only Chile has done. Chile did this under a dictator. And now Chile is trying to recover the public sector, but it's very hard to recover it once you've broken it up, as Chile did, as we're in the process of doing. And why we would want to emulate Chile where the economists there were infatuated with Milton Friedman, who is the great libertarian economist that there was. He's no longer living. But he had a tremendous influence on Chile, and we're following the Chilean model now. Wisconsin is, and Indiana is, and most of the industrial Midwest is.
Diane Ravitch is our guest this hour. She's going to be speaking before a rally for public schools taking place at 6 o'clock tonight at MATC in downtown Milwaukee. The rally 2 days before a state budget hearing in this city, where public school supporters plan to testify against the proposal, pre-K through 12 education cuts of $127 million. But there are legislators who are getting pushback from people in the education field in districts all over the state who are trying to do the same, but you can't do the same with a lot less money, and budgets have been, over the past few years, cut quite substantially. So we're talking about why this is the case. How much concern is there? How concerned are you as a parent or as an educator or as a student about the direction education is going in the state of Wisconsin? Do you support an expansion of voucher schools? Do you support that with the same kind of accountability as public schools? Do you worry about an undermining of public education in the state of Wisconsin? What if you're a teacher? What if you experience? We certainly welcome your phone calls. There are public hearings all over the state, so check your community public school hearings before the Joint Finance Committee this week in many locations here in the state of Wisconsin. Here's how you can make your voice heard right now, and that's by giving us a call. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Diane Ravitch is a research professor of education at New York University. She's a historian of education. Interestingly, she was the assistant secretary of education in the administration of President George Herbert Walker Bush, and as she said, a member of a couple conservative think tanks, and she saw what was happening with voucher schools and with choice schools and changed her mind about the effectiveness of these kinds of schools. She is the author of many books, including The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education. We'll take your phone calls. Our lines are filled. Just keep trying. You'll get through. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Diane Ravitch, the future of public education, the hearings that are taking place concerning the budget this week is what's on our agenda this hour. And we'll start our calls with Frank is first in Onalaska. Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Thanks. There's two arguments I think that we need to make in terms of the voucher program and choice. The obvious one, which I don't understand why conservatives support, a program that takes public funds and subsidizes private education. That's the obvious one. But the other one, I think, needs to be turning their argument on the head with the premise that a minority or low-income student in a failing public school, let's use Milwaukee as an example, is given the voucher and can move their education to a better school. But if you turn that argument on its head and make a super commitment to that concept, you fund every single student in the Milwaukee public system, and you put them on buses, and you bus them out to the suburbs where their better schools are. And I can't see, and obviously there's a caution about, what busing and segregation and that type of thing means to our past history. But I think if you turn that argument fully, you would turn the current wave of privatizing our public education on its head, because you would find that these conservatives wouldn't stand for having this mass exodus of poor students into their suburban high schools or schools.
Thanks for your call, Frank. Diane?
Well, I think that it would be a tough sell, for sure, but it's also important to recognize that when the very term failing school is a misnomer, that term virtually didn't exist in our language until the late 1990s. People didn't think the school was failing. They thought, this school has a lot of kids who are in poverty. This school has a lot of kids who have disabilities. This school has a lot of children who don't speak English. And it's not the school that's failing. It's the community that's failing. It's the society that's failing. And wherever you find high concentrations of poverty and high concentrations of racial segregation, you'll find schools that have low test scores. It doesn't mean the teachers are bad. It means that there are problems in that community that our society has chosen to ignore. So I think that you're right in saying that if we broke up segregation, the kids would benefit. But I don't think there's any will, on, political will, on the part of the legislature in Wisconsin or other states to do that. But I think there are things that could be done short-term that would help schools in terms of, let's say, reducing class size. That's tremendously important because where children are having struggling with reading and writing and math, they should be in smaller classes. We're one of the few advanced countries in the world that spends more money, public money, on rich kids than on poor kids. In most countries, the poor kids actually get more money because they need more services. They have greater needs. So I do think that it would be great if we would try to do something about desegregating our schools. I have often thought that if Arne Duncan, when he had $5 billion in 2009, and they said, come up with a way to use that $5 billion, if he had said, let's have a national competition and the states that win will be with proposals to desegregate their schools, well, today would be looking 6 years later at a dramatically changed society because everybody wanted a part of that money. Hundreds of, you know, $5 billion divided up amongst, I think, 18 states eventually was hundreds of millions of dollars. We would have a different society if we had focused on desegregation. Instead, he used that money to incentivize more charter schools and more privatization and more testing. And he's that now we have high-stakes testing all across the country. And people are opting out of the testing all over the country. And we're going to see mass refusals all over as a result of the tremendous emphasis that's put on testing. None of this helps minority kids, by the way.
What about mass concern about what's going on with public education? There are hearings, as you know, and you're at a rally tonight at MATC. Do you sense a great deal of concern among parents, among people who were in public schools in this state, or is it a kind of a small group of people who are concerned because they're directly affected by it, being teachers and administrators?
Well, I think that educators understand that the schools are under attack, and teachers in particular get it because they're directly under attack. Part of the philosophy that was adopted by Arne Duncan and people like him is that if there are low scores, it's the teacher's fault. And we know that that's not true because every country in the world recognizes that low scores are a directly correlated and perhaps even caused by family income. And poverty leads to low test scores for a whole lot of different reasons. But I think increasingly parents are getting the message that their schools are under attack. They see larger class sizes. They see cuts in services and in programs. And I think the whole opt-out movement is not union-led. It's not teacher-led. It's parent-led. And I live in a state in New York where we had probably more opt-outs last year than any other state in the country. And ours is a blue state. And yet there was a parent rebellion that led to something like 60,000 kids opting out. I think this year it's going to be closer to 200,000. So that's parent-led. That's not teacher-led. Teachers can lose their job if they even discuss opting out. But parents are very concerned, and they are very upset with the idea that these tests that are being started this year are not appropriate for their children. There's going to be, for those kids who take them, a majority of students will fail them because they're designed to fail most kids.
Thanks very much for your call, Frank. Let's go next to Rose in Menominee Falls. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I remember when Act 10 was passed, that was supposed to be this big panacea and save all this money. And I remember hearing that, yes, it would save money in the first couple of years. And I think it did. And, of course, that was touted all over. But I also remember hearing that after those first couple of years, we were going to be back to square one and in trouble financially with the schools. Is that what's happening now?
Diane?
Yeah, Kathleen, is that what's causing the cutbacks? I think the cutbacks are being created because the governor really doesn't prioritize education. Why is he cutting $3 million out of the budget of the university? That's going to cripple one of the great university systems of the United States. And it's very hard. If the economy were flourishing, he would not be imposing these draconian cuts on all of education and all of public education in Wisconsin.
And it's $300 million, too. It's right. Much bigger than you thought. I guess that the way that the, and they're not with this, but the administration would tout the fact that they're giving property tax relief to the hardworking taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin, and that's what will spur the economy here, and that's where the money is being directed. So they'll say that they're giving more money to school districts, but then there are restrictions on where that money can be used, and it has to go to property tax relief. And so that's what's going on here, property tax relief.
Well, you know, if you have property tax relief, but your son or daughter is going to a school where the classes have gotten very large and then doesn't have the opportunity for a public higher education, then that property tax relief came with a very high price tag.
Here are some interesting comments on Facebook. We were talking about Minnesota, and here are some specific numbers, Diane. Jim posted an article about the Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton's revised budget proposal. What a contrast here. It calls for $444.2 million more to be added to his $42 billion spending, with most of the additional spending for schools and other education priorities, including universal access to preschool and tuition freezes for college students. What a completely different philosophy.
Well, it's a difference in ideology. And the ideology there is to understand that the young people, the children in every state, represent the future. And the state of Wisconsin does not want to invest in the future. It wants to invest instead in property tax relief, which is today. But what about tomorrow? Tomorrow it's the young people who are going to have the skills and knowledge to lead the state. Are they going to leave the state?
Thanks, Rose, for your call. Scott in Whitewater, hi.
Thank you very much. Excellent lead into my call about property tax relief. In the Whitewater School District, the students in the high school that plan on taking the college prep or the college credited courses in high school, They have to go back and redo their schedules because they're dropping all of the credited college courses due to the cuts to the public system. Now, the $6 that my neighbor saved on his property taxes, he is now going to have to pay for 2, 3, or 4 extra college classes for his 2 high school daughters. And when the numbers don't add up and it doesn't make sense to do something, just look for where the money is going, who's profiting, and who gets the power. And that's where you get your answer on why it's being done.
So these were what, AP classes that are no longer offered? I'm not sure I get the whole story.
Correct.
Oh, my.
Well, that's pathetic because it's almost as though there is a war on it against education. And you have to ask, who are the victims? The victims are your children. And, you know, I don't know how much property tax relief you're getting. I thought you said $6, but I couldn't believe it was so little. But it is tragic because the opportunities are being taken away from the children of Wisconsin.
Thank you very much. We'll get some more information on those AP courses. If people want to send us information about this, too, there has been a heck of a lot of news reporting on this, and it would be interesting to hear, although I'm sure it will come out at the hearings this week, what's happening with school districts and what's happening with the offering of courses like AP courses in Whitewater or other places. Scott, thanks for your call and your information. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jean in Lake Geneva. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm a retired teacher, not by choice, but as a result of changes in the educational system, but I do have 25 years experience, and I would like to just make 2 points. I believe that we have an overarching agenda politically to transfer wealth from the public sector, which is generated by our taxes, into the private sector, and that drives the privatization of education, even though it is not a provable fact at all that privatizing education helps students. The objective is not to help students. Secondly, I feel that the language in which this conversation is had, as your guest mentioned, we're talking about schools failing. Until we can use the word honestly, it is students who fail, not schools. They are inadequate. We will never answer the question, how can we help students to succeed? So I think being honest about the language we use, if we say society is failing, well, that's too big a goal, and therefore we really can't, you know, change our whole society. But we can change students. I have done it personally, and I think that we need to take responsibility, parents, adults, but most of all, individual students, accountable for their progress.
Thank you, Jean, for your call. Diane?
Well, I certainly agree with the caller that there is a transfer. When you privatize anything, there's a transfer of public monies from public institutions to private pockets. And this is happening in many states across the country where the charter sector in particular has become a place where entrepreneurs have become involved because you can make money running a charter school. There is a business model, which is to have the lowest paid teachers, have them turn over every 2 or 3 or 4 years so that they never get a higher salary, they never collect a pension, and then just keep this churn in low-wage teachers, and it generates a lot of profits. There are a lot of for-profit charter schools that are being operated across the country. They're virtual charter schools that are cash cows. I mean, this is about transferring public wealth to the private sector. There's no question about it. As for vouchers, I think it's a political move to win over religious constituencies for this whole privatization agenda. It's terrible for public education, obviously, because the money that's taken out of the system deprives the public system, which serves most children. It's a one question that I have, and I don't know if any of your listeners can answer this, is aren't there members of the legislature who are graduates of public schools? I mean, Wisconsin has always been known for having good public schools, and in fact, as recently as a year or two ago, had one of the highest high school graduation
right.
rates in the country.
Right.
So there must be lots of legislators who are voting for privatization who received a public education and are now voting to kill the institution that educated them. As for the second point that the caller made, it's students that are failing, and that's true. But why are they failing? They're failing because, in most cases, they live in poverty, and there's a lot of they don't know if they're going to have a meal. They don't get regular medical care. They have high levels of illness and absence, and so forth and so on. The fact is, the United States has more child poverty than any other advanced nation in the world. And if we were to, you know, get down to what are root causes, let's address root causes. We would have a federal government. That was addressing this issue of poverty. It's outrageous that something like 51% of the children in this country live in low-income families and 25% of them live in impoverished families. And there's no other nation in the world, at least no first-world nation, that compares to us in poverty. So the most effective education reform program would be one that created jobs so that there was less poverty in America. And there seems to be no political willingness to address that issue.
Diane Ravitch is our guest this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls. We're talking about the future of public education. Diane is in Milwaukee. She's going to be speaking tonight at a community rally for public schools, which is going to take place at MATC. It's 2 days before the state budget hearing in Milwaukee on Friday at Alverno College before the Joint Finance Committee. She'll be speaking on Governor Walker's proposed pre-K through 12 education cuts of $127 million and also test and also the expansion of voucher and privately run charter schools here in Wisconsin. She's a research professor of education at New York University, a historian of education, used to be a proponent of voucher schools and charter schools and testing, and changed her mind because she didn't see them doing very much. In fact, quite the opposite of what they were supposed to be doing. And so she changed her mind. She's written a lot of books about this. She was Assistant Secretary of Education in the administration of President George Herbert Walker Bush. Well, here's our number. Our lines are busy. I don't want to frustrate you, but eventually you'll get through 800-486-8655. And you can add to the public discussion of this. We invite you to go to our Facebook page where we usually have pretty active discussion of what the issue of the day is. So if you can do it, go to the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we'd like to hear what you think about all of this. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Diane Ravitch is with us this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls. We go next to Dave in Madison. Hi, Dave.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love the fact that you're having the talk and the topic. Hate the fact that we're having to have it. I've been in Wisconsin for 10 years, and this particular topic really, really hits home with me. You know, you had mentioned earlier that these changes that are being implemented, and it's not just education. I think there are many other areas that similar changes are being taken on. And you said it's a matter of choice, and it's a matter of values. And, you know, my wife and I have talked about it. We've got two young daughters, and we're quite likely making the choice to move because of a lot of these things. And in some ways, I feel like I'm giving up the fight. Because I love Wisconsin. As I said, I've only been here 10 years, but absolutely love it. But it's not the same Wisconsin that I moved to, and I firmly believe that. And I have probably like three questions here. Answer them all if you can. If you can't, great. But you know, you mentioned some poverty stats, and I believe that poverty plays obviously a large role in what happens in the educational field. Would love to know where someone can learn more about that. What a person can do about it. How can someone arm themselves to have this type of discussion with those who have very, very strong opposing views? And, Diane, you obviously came from the other side of the aisle on this, right?
Yes.
And I use that term loosely, right?
Right.
And you had a change of heart. So, and have you found different resources that can do the same for other folks, right? Make them see or help them see, what you feel the real trajectory of this type of policy is. You know, you mentioned the Chilean model, and I'm going to look into that. And then, you know, lastly, what can the average Joe like me do other than just get pissed off and call my legislator, which really doesn't do any good in my mind?
Diane?
Well, those are all good questions, and I hope you don't leave Wisconsin because you should stay here and vote and try to bring about a change. And, you know, the hopeful thing is that American politics tends to run in cycles, and we go through cycles of conservatism and cutting back on everything, and then there's another cycle when people get fed up with and see that their lives are being impoverished as the public sector is impoverished. What I would recommend in terms of sources, not to be self-serving, but what I've tried to do is to provide people with the information they need to have the discussion that should be going on. First is the book that Kathleen mentioned, which is called The Death and Life of the Great American School System, How Testing and Choice Are Undermining Education. And then I followed that up with a book called Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement. And what I showed in Reign of Error is that our American schools are not broken. Test scores today nationally are the highest they've ever been. Graduation rates are the highest they've ever been. Dropout rates are the lowest they've ever been. We have a very successful school system nationally, and where we have a very serious problem is where there's high poverty and segregation. Those are the issues we should be working on, and there are specific things that we could do about it. And I have like a dozen chapters in the book about what we should be doing instead of privatizing, because this is going to simply destroy the public system, which is functioning quite well for most kids. And we should be focusing on helping the kids that do need the help with reduced class sizes, better arts programs, universal pre-kindergarten, and things of that kind. So there are things we can do. In Wisconsin, you're going to have to get a different government. Governor Walker is determined to privatize and destroy public education, and it's going to be a battle. And it has been a battle these past several years, and the battle's going to continue. He's not going to be there forever. And you got to make sure that get involved as a citizen and fight for better government.
Thank you, Jay, very much for your call. Let's go to John next. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Yes?
Go right ahead.
Oh?
Yeah, John, you're on the air.
Okay. Yeah, I had a couple of comments. One that I grew up in the inner cities of California, San Jose specifically, and I grew up in these impoverished schools where I hate to use the term failing schools, but that's what they were called. What I've noticed from my personal experience and from everything that I've seen and read, the biggest reason most of these schools are failing is because they don't have enough money to properly educate. So right now all I'm hearing is they don't have enough money to educate, so let's pull all their money away and let's see what they do.
Diane.
Well, that's exactly right. I mentioned earlier in the program that the United States is one of the few nations that spends more public money on rich kids than on poor kids. And where there are poor kids, they have greater needs, and they should have smaller classes, and they should have more resources, and teachers should be well paid. And what's happening is, instead of addressing the problems directly, whether it's in the inner city of San Jose or Detroit or Chicago, the politicians are turning the kids over to charter operators who don't provide a better quality of education, and who extract a lot of money just for their management fees. So it seems like we're chasing our tail and not addressing directly the issue, which you pinpointed, and that is that schools in impoverished neighborhoods tend to be impoverished schools, and those schools should get more resources and not less, and they're being cut back. And in fact, you know, in this state, all schools are going to be cut back, and I think that the only good I can see in that is that in the districts that are dominated by Republican voters, they're going to make noise too, and that's a good thing.
You know, and we're talking about, you mentioned the governor of the state of Wisconsin. It isn't completely, I mean, maybe to this extent, what's happening with education. But you mentioned Arne Duncan and what's happening with Democrats on this issue as well. And they have less than full-hearted support of public education, some Democrats.
I think that's true. And this is a big change. And this is something that I wrote about in both my books, which is that there used to be two different education agendas, at least in the federal government. On the one hand, Republicans supported testing, accountability, and choice, and Democrats supported equity and teacher training. Then the Democrats pretty much forgot that equity was their agenda, and so now you have the Obama administration pushing testing, accountability, and choice. And you have to wonder, well, hey, who lost the Democratic agenda?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even now, there's in Washington, they're rewriting the basic federal law, which is, it's called the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, but George W. Bush renamed it No Child Left Behind. It's all about testing. And if you go back to when that act was passed, 1965, it was part of the anti-poverty program, and it was meant to send money to poor schools and poor districts because that would help the kids to have smaller classes, to have better reading materials. And the Democrats have forgotten the origins of that law, and they're now fighting to maintain annual testing. And there is no country no high-performing country in the world that has annual testing. We're the only one. In other countries, whether it's in Japan or China or Finland or name any of the top-performing countries, Canada, they don't have annual testing. They don't even have testing in the first six grades. Canada has it in grade 3 and grade 6, but all of the other countries have only grade 6. And Finland, which is a very high-performing country, has no standardized testing at all. So we're the only one that feels that testing is somehow going to cure the achievement gap, and that's simply nonsense. It's a huge waste of money, and it's only benefiting the testing corporation.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that really caught my ear is when you were talking a little while ago about legislators, and of course there are many of them who went to public schools. Most of us went to public schools. I loved going to my public school. I love school. And we have a reputation in Wisconsin for having terrific public schools. So my question is, I've talked to so many teachers, not as many as you, who are so demoralized right now, who just feel that they're beat up on by their neighbors and by people in the state for being moochers in some way. And it's such a hard profession. There are so many really good teachers that I find it so hard to hear of all the negative things that are being said about them. You wonder about teachers who are leaving the profession, and many of them are. They're retiring early. there's something that's just wrong about that, because we all need good teachers, and we benefited from them, and certainly our children will, or our grandchildren will benefit from good teachers and good public schools, won't we? How are we losing sight of that?
Well, I think it's very important to bear in mind that there is a war on public education, and there's a war specifically on public school teachers, and the teachers know it. And whether it's not just Wisconsin, it's all over the country, you hear the same thing from teachers of why, how did we suddenly become a public enemy when what we're doing, it's such a hard job. And I would like to see any of these politicians who complain about us spend a week in the classroom or a day in the classroom. They couldn't handle it. I've often thought it would be good if the people running, whether it's the states or the federal government, I'd like to see them take an eighth grade test. I mean, kids today are learning math that none of us ever took when we were.
I know, I could never pass it. Oh.
I mean, I'm just talking about an eighth grade test, not even a 12th grade test.
Right.
And the test today, the test that kids in Wisconsin are going to be taking in the next week or two, they will have to sit for 8 to 11 hours to pass a reading and math test. Now, when we who are adults were in school, we had our tests were written by the teachers, and they lasted a class period, 45 or 50 minutes. They didn't last 8 to 10 hours. And, you know, it's easier to take the bar exam, I think, than to take an 8th grade test that'll be given in the schools of the state.
Let's go to Jane in central Wisconsin. Hi, Jane.
Yes, hello. I just learned yesterday that one of my local area universities normally has multiple candidates for the School of Education in Mathematics. This year they had two applications, and neither one of those students would have made it through the process previously. And so the big concern is by those young people that the public schools in Wisconsin are being dismantled, that the teachers have been made the enemy, the thugs, that they wanted to go into the profession to teach their passion because that's where the best learning comes from with those students, but they instead see it's all about testing. And so no one's going into the School of Education. And I would just like to add to that, I've heard so many stories of what's happening behind the scenes that the public is not aware of, and the staff and the teachers are working their very best to continue to make great things happen on less and less support and materials. And so everything looks fine at the moment in the public schools, but that is not going to last forever. And I'm really sad for the day when they're going to find out what's happened to the public school system. And I'm so sorry for the students.
Diane.
Well, you know, Governor Walker wants to reduce the standards for entry into teaching so that anyone with a bachelor's degree who passes a test can become a teacher. And that's simply saying teaching is not a profession. And that's going to hurt the state of Wisconsin, too. Actually, enrollments in education programs are down across the country because of this constant battering the teachers are taking. And when you think about it, why in the world, what kind of a society makes teachers the enemy? It sounds a little bit like the Chinese Cultural Revolution when teachers had to wear dunce caps and were paraded through the streets and ridiculed. This is a kind of anti-education, anti-intellectualism that can only hurt our society. And those of us who care about education, who care about having an educated society, and who understand that educated people are better voters and they're the creators of the new technology, whatever our progress we're going to make in the future is going to come about as a result of education, we have to really educate ourselves, educate the public, as to the absurdity of the attacks on public education and on teachers.
What are you going to tell them tonight in Milwaukee, Diane?
I'm going to tell them what I've just told you.
No, and then
I'm
some.
I'm going to talk about the fact that it is bizarre that the governor wants to expand charters and vouchers when they have evidently, I mean, the evidence is very clear over 25 years that it's failed. The privatization has failed, and yet he wants more of it. And this makes no sense. I have considered Milwaukee the Petri dish for the reform movement, and it's very clear that public education is far superior to the privatization of that's going on now in this state and in many other states. And now we have the evidence. 25 years is time enough to say it didn't work. And what we need to do is to restore and rebuild public education and once again to honor our teachers.
Diane Ravitch, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Diane Ravitch will be at MATC tonight at 6 o'clock. There's a community rally for public schools. And if you go to our Facebook page, I believe KP has put up where the public hearings are around the state. There's been one in Brilliant that's going on today until, I believe, 5 o'clock. And there will be one in Milwaukee at Alverno College on Friday of this week. But there are others, hearings on the budget. And let me make sure on that, of that Brilliant one. That's today, and it's until at 5 o'clock, yeah, today. So look at our Facebook page for where those hearings are. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Thanks to Diane Ravitch, former Assistant Secretary of Education during the reign of President George Herbert Walker Bush.